I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
Waste. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, the United States produced 292.4 million tons of municipal solid waste in 2018. That's 4.9 pounds per person per day. We're talking mostly about single-use products, not bottles and cans, but toiletries, electronics, cosmetics, and more, the majority of which end up in landfills. Though we may try to recycle or reuse, only a small portion of this daily waste is actually processed. That's where TerraCycle comes in.
In this episode, we are speaking with Richard Pearl, Chief Administrative Officer of TerraCycle, a company leading the way in recycling hard-to-recycle waste. We talk to him about the economics behind recycling and how a new company, Loop, could provide a model for phasing out single-use containers altogether.
Take a listen.
I'm Richard Pearl. My work is Chief Administrative Officer of TerraCycle. I say my work because I've been an activist for social change in business for almost four decades. And there's a, from a personal perspective, spiritual component to the fact that what I do relates to my beliefs and kind of commitment to service. It makes me happy. My background is in law, in business. I studied both at Columbia after graduating college there, in between undergrad and grad school. I worked in the not-for-profit world. I realized I was mostly preaching to the converted, so I wanted credibility and credentials and went back to the same campus uptown and achieved those degrees and became a lawyer, but never practiced. I've always worked in what we now call impact businesses for the last number of years. So by way of introduction, other than my affiliation with TerraCycle, I guess what I'd say is I've put together a bag of tricks that are deeply impact related, but relate to business, law, negotiation, and kind of the bigger picture, and then structures that can help get us through the bigger picture is generally where I see myself working in the past and certainly presently with TerraCycle and Loop, which is a new affiliated company of TerraCycle.
Could you maybe delve in a little bit, what is TerraCycle? And you know, I know it's not your typical recycling company.
TerraCycle has two main businesses. And so one, the TerraCycle business, which is about 16, 17 years old, operates in 20 countries, is profitable, engages the world's largest brands and the world's largest retailers in 20 countries. And it profitably recycles hundreds of waste streams that no other company in the world recycles. What gets recycled universally? Glass, paper,
plastic.
Certain metals like beer cans, and certain plastics like water bottles, but not most plastics. Why are those things recycled? And pretty much universally, even where there's no waste management, it's what the waste pickers pick are those four things. Why do those things get recycled? And nothing else, not pens, toothbrushes, candy wrappers, juice pouches, lipstick, coffee capsules, contact lenses, cigarette butts. Everything else goes either to incineration in Europe and Asia or landfill here or ends up in oceans. So the question is, why is it that those four things get recycled? And the answer is simply economics. Those four things are the only things which, if you collect, sort, and recycle them and try to sell them, you can make money. Virgin is more expensive than recycled for glass, paper, water bottles, and beer cans. So that's why they're recycled. But for everything else, it's cheaper to make new from virgin. The equation is, for everything else that I named, which is what TerraCycle profitably collects, if you collect, sort, and recycle it, your costs will exceed the value of the material because virgin is cheaper. So why would people lose money? They don't, which is why it gets put in a pile or burnt, sometimes for energy. So how is it that we make money doing what no one else makes money doing? We don't only look to the value of the material. We look to the value of it to someone who pays us. For example, We make it worth the while for Colgate to pay us in 11 countries to recycle toothbrushes nationally. Or for L'Oreal for beauty care, a Bausch & Lomb for that. And you go on, P&G, Nestle, Unilever, PepsiCo, and smaller brands in all kinds of categories. Look on the back of your packaging, you'll see a TerraCycle logo, Febreze, Toms of Maine, Garnier. It all says you can recycle through TerraCycle. Now, the point is the world is really trying to, people want to lower their footprint. They want the content. They don't want the stupid package that now is the owner of the consumer. Wasn't always that way. There was a milkman, but now it's single use. And in that game, it's a race to the bottom to make things cheaper because the manufacturer sees it as a cost of goods sold. And so as it gets cheaper and cheaper, it gets less and less recyclable. And so how is it we afford to recycle? We go back to the manufacturer and say, look, if we can prove to you that your consumers will patronize you over your competitor by you paying us, you'll see a return on investment on that. In the meantime, we pay for post-consumer programs where you can collect the stuff and recycle it and truly recycle it. And they pay us and it works and their sales go up. I mean, the most blatant example of that, but there's so many different models, but the most blatant one is if we collect toothbrushes at Walmart or, you know, Kroger's or anywhere, people don't just bring in used toothbrushes, they buy things, and not just oral care. What does Walmart want in the age of Amazon? Foot traffic. What do? They give end caps and more shelf space to the sponsoring brand, Bic and Sharpie for pens, etc. And that extra sales pays for them to pay us. Do we own trucks? Not one. We use UPS in the US, Royal Mail in the UK, Sagawa in Japan, common carriers. So the eco cost is not an extra trip, an incremental trip. I think the most important point to say here is we change the economics of waste by giving someone, our many, many clients, the ability to have a recycling program for the consumers who care about it. And then those consumers patronize them, their sales go up, and we look much more like an agency. Though we have all the logistics, we just outsource them, including recycling to reputable third-party facilities to create that and then give a second life to the materials.
So you're basically banking on the fact that consumers prefer to buy recycled products, or to consumers are starting to change their consciousness and starting to be attentive to who's recycling and who's not, and that's the profit margin.
That is the motivation for a consumer to patronize a brand. Get that the brands may still be using virgin materials to package the goods, but that the goods have a second life or a third life means that you're not extracting, manufacturing, using once, discarding, and then repeating. Extract, manufacture, use once, discard, repeat. We're breaking that cycle for what we collect. That's a good thing.
So a lot of people kind of make a differentiation between what is recycled, in other words, purchased, used, and wasted, and then recycled, versus can we design products that are longer lasting, that basically go cradle to cradle rather than cradle to grave to recycle to cradle. Is there a way that you think about that with TerraCycle?
Well, that's what Loop is. Loop is the beginning of the end of disposable single-use packaging and the return of the milkman model to Häagen-Dazs packaging, to all the major brands. Whereas TerraCycle recycles the non-recyclable by changing the economics. What you really need to do is arrest the process and stop making single-use altogether, which frankly means restoring ownership of the package back to the manufacturer. Why? When the milkman existed, or Coke with their, you know, returnable bottles, or InBev with their beer bottles, right? When the manufacturer owns the package, there's built-in sustainability. Why? If the package, the milk bottle, costs $10 and you get 10 uses, it's $1 a use. But if you get 100 uses because you built it to last, it's 10 cents a use. But when you're going to make it and sell it for a single use, you just make it cheaper and cheaper. That's how you make more money. When you're going to own it, you build it to last. And so Loop restores ownership of a better package the consumer doesn't own. They put a deposit down and then they can return it. You could buy it at McDonald's your burger container and drop it off at Kroger's. You could buy it at Shell Gas or buy it at Duane Reade and drop it off at Shell Gas. In other words, it doesn't matter as long, because we're going to have over time collection in multiple countries and certainly throughout the countries with all kinds of venues. And yes, Burger King and McDonald's have signed up for shakes and coffee containers and burger containers. And this is something coming, but there have been over 10,000 articles on Loop in the past, you know, year and a half, and it's now rolling out. COVID did slow it down some. So there, it's not recycling. It's a reuse coming into everyday products and allowing people to just get the content they want. And it's functional. For example, the Häagen-Dazs packaging, which Ben & Jerry's is coming out with as well, keeps the ice cream cold because of an insulation layer of air for a few hours at room temperature. The benefit of that is not just the consumer convenience during a hot summer picnic, say in Jakarta, but rather also or additionally, it is the carbon savings because you can deliver. Think of all the ice cream being delivered in the heat of summer in refrigerated trucks because of the insulation, all in a package that pencils out.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. You know, I find it intriguing how from a industrial, like we passed through an industrial age and making, I mean, you can see when you looked at your grandma's clothes, for example, right? We were all kind of handmade, still custom made, custom fit. Or the shoes, like shoe industry, also really big, right? Like I think our grandparents still had like leather shoes, leather boots. And now I think we're kind of coming back into, well, first of all, it came into where basically it was the mass production and you had to fit into it. So we go into stores and we don't have to make sure we find something which fits us, not the other way around, right? It's not no longer custom made for us. And so what you are saying now, like, I think this is what Loop is basically catching the wave and actually trying to retrofit it. Yeah, so it's mass produced for the product.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's taking out the waste. They're taking out the waste of the packaging. So
yeah, I find it very, very, very cool, very intriguing thought. Digitalization also could play a huge role in this. Yeah, but at the other hand, there is so much waste, Richard. I mean, there is still so much waste. You know, this whole efficiency of the mass production, I think, kind of got a little bit out of hand. So basically, our manufacturers then didn't really think of how is this going to be recycled. As you said, no, recycling was kind of a new kind of term even. you said it a different way. You said impact was not even on the table 30 years ago, right? So how could be recycling be part of a mindset? Like, how do we faster, more efficiently produce something, but we don't think about how is it going to be put back into the cycle? Was just not part of the deal. It was just not part of our thought process.
But I'm actually curious, because I think what's genius about a Loop in particular is that it makes, you know, solid, sustainable product development profitable, right? I mean, it basically makes the business case, you know, you're going to save money if you produce reusable packaging for this product that you're selling and you keep on reusing it. And I wonder why through this, you know, that makes so much sense to me. And why did we go off this weird track where we stopped doing that in the first place? You know, it just seems like mass production became profitable and somehow we lost sight of the advantages of reusable packaging and things like that. Do you have any ideas of why we did
that? I do, but it's more of a spiritual breach where we no longer, we saw ourselves as separate from the earth. We saw ourselves as separate from other people. It was fine to just use something once, throw it out, put it in the trash and out of sight, out of mind. And also, we were told that was the right thing to do. When plastics came out in the 50s, somebody said, how do you make money with this? So they brought it to Madison Avenue and they came up with this wonderful idea, liberate mom from washing, use once, discard, repeat. And this was an advertisement from the 1950s, okay? And at that point, ownership of the package moved to the end user. And it was just celebrate the fact that you could just throw it out. The multi-billion dollar garbage industry and all the landfills got a very nice win out of that. All the plastic consumers, had convenience, and no one thought about what the impacts were on the earth. And, you know, this was...
And I'm pretty sure, Richard, sorry that I interrupted you, I'm pretty sure there are lots of people who still think today, what's the problem with that?
I agree that out of sight, out of mind is exactly the kind of, I like to call it the flush syndrome. And I think we're numb to the impacts. We come home, we unpack our bags, we unpack an Amazon box, you see all this waste and packaging, you put it in the hall or you put it in the garbage, and you kind of have this sort of exasperated feel, but what else can I do? And you didn't have a choice before. I think the fact that one will have a choice will create people to say, what choice do I want to make? When they didn't have a choice, it just seemed inevitable. That's one piece. Secondly, I think that what people are seeing now in terms of climate change, people can say, I believe in climate change or I don't. But the truth is, islands of waste the size of Texas in the ocean, and the other issues that relate to floods, to extreme heat, to rains, and other ecological challenges right now, including potentially the slowing of the currents in the Atlantic, which could have devastating weather impacts. And all of these are happening and causing economic havoc, not just ecological havoc, population havoc, et cetera. People are going to say, what can I do? Carbon is abstract, but waste, nothing lives without consuming and eliminating. And if you don't do either one of them, you die. So people do have to waste. The question is it something they can take responsibility for? And somehow it is something that I think is a touch point for people. I can at least lower my footprint through if I want the ice cream, I don't need to put a piece of cardboard with plastic on it in the garbage. People will begin, we hope, to see disposable packaging as a form of pollution, because that's what it is. A landfill is pollution.
Yeah.
We kid ourselves. And in Europe, they call it, we have the thermal recycling. Thermal recycling is a moronic oxymoron. Okay, it's not just an oxymoron, it's moronic. But I'll tell you, in Asia, we work in Korea, we work in Japan, and they are proudly, like some Europeans, saying, we have thermal recycling. Our program was stopped collecting razor blades in Sweden because the municipalities command that they get to have the waste to burn it in their incinerators so they can pay the bonds. They need to generate money from the burning of waste, despite the fact that that means that the plastic, the replacement plastic, comes from bringing carbon out of the earth and into the atmosphere. So what I'm saying to you is simply this. However it is, I don't know that everybody is feeling this issue. There are some who will wear blinders longer than others until it hits them right in the face. And there are some who may never see it, but there are many who do see it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think this notion of really looking at the economics and mirroring the economics to the values that we want to reflect in our business. I think that's one of our goals, as a podcast, is to have people start to connect both with nature and to their spending habits and to how those impacts come together. And if you are making the choices that are consistent with nature, you're actually having a better time too, right? Like you're actually getting a better experience.
No, that was the point I was getting at. It's the breach that comes when you really separate yourself from your environment. And when you get back in tune with it, as you were just saying, you have a happier life. And I think when we can live a little more harmoniously, not at the expense of consumer convenience, by the way, but for a better consumer thing, and you got to make it price comparable or better if you could make it cheaper, but it's not going to get to cheaper till we really get to scale.
Yeah, I was going to say, I imagine in some sense, when you improve packaging to the extent that you're talking about on the loop side of the question, you are increasing consumer costs, and that makes it a luxurious item or a luxury item as opposed to the throwaway razor, right? You're going to buy the the cool loop razor, but that you have a certain income that you have to be able to command in order to.
No, sir.
Okay.
No.
Prove me wrong.
I got to be really clear with you. The price is to be comparable. Okay. Yes, you have to have enough money to put down a couple dollar deposit per unit, which comes back to you with an incentive. Because when you return, say the two of you go out to Duane Reade a year from now and you go spend, you know, $100 on groceries and $30 deposit. You don't have to return that deposit to Duane Reade. You could deposit, return it anywhere. But let's assume you do return it to Duane Reade. Duane Reade is likely going to give you a message that says, Mel and Stephanie, thank you for bringing your $30 deposit back. If you spend it in store, it's $36. 20% for you to spend it in store rather than getting your cash back. Okay. Now, that's actually a 20% discount on the money that you put out just to get back. So, or premium on it, but it's coming in the form of a discount if you shop in the store because they're expecting you to spend another $100 and probably buy some more things with deposits. But the point is, this is supposed to be. Now, some brands will use it as a premium choice. But most of them see the need. They're really hurting from the consumer disdain for single-use plastic. And they like the idea of moving to durable. They need to see it get to scale for the cost of cleaning per unit to come down. And it's a major investment to get a system that's disruptive up and running when it's like this. You know, solar costs more than fossil fuel things to get started. And then over time, it pays off. Generally, the sustainable answer does have a little more upfront cost until it gets to scale. And then you see what's happening. So all I'm saying to you is we do not see this as for the luxuries. We see it red states, blue states, and the Consumer Insight says there's equal interest in red states. And furthermore, and we find that in TerraCycle programs as well, it is not more expensive.
I have a question about, you know, this is clearly an evolution of economics and the way in which you think about business. And how do you think about competition in this context? Do you hope there's more people doing more kinds of recycling?
I actually had a question concerning competition. It's so funny, we've come up with the same thing.
Minds, right? but TerraCycle is obviously out there way ahead of the game. Are there others getting involved in different sectors, or how does it look to you?
Well, there are different games, right? Like one is recycling, and most recycling takes place for the normal recyclables, glass, paper, water bottle, and beer cans. The economics don't work for recycling what they're called non-recyclables, which is everything else. So there isn't much competition unless somebody can solve the economics the way we did. It's a complicated business, and there are some who are trying, and I learned of one today that's working with schools, and there's something in the UK that's working with offices, and, you know, I mean, this all needs to happen. And so, you know, we've created a business model that we expect competition, and I think it's a good thing for the world that people have more choices. We can't do it all for sure. On the loop side, reuse is the answer. And we haven't cornered reuse. We've cornered a corner of reuse in the following way. There are lots of places that say you can take your bottle, bring it back to a place and refill it. But what you're refilling it with is generic content, soap. You're not choosing whether it's, you know, Tide versus, you know, Cascade or whatever, all the different types of brands. You're getting generic product. There are companies that provide you even, you know, direct to consumer, you know, mail order. You can mail back your empties, but they're not the major brands. Now, if you look at the percentage of sales that people buy, maybe it's because of advertising. Maybe it's because they're better. But most people buy branded products. If you look at in a category, how much of sales are branded versus how much is not branded, most is branded. So if you want to change the world, you got to give people what they want to buy. And the other thing is, how many people want to carry all their empty bottles and wash their empty bottles, bring them in, and you don't run out of things all at the same time? How many trips do you want to take? And you're not getting your branded product. And, you know, I like the smell of this one. I like the name of this one. I like the image of that, whatever it is. You know, people make their decisions because they like the model. Otherwise, why would people use models? So I just mean, like, you know, I mean, buy me, you'll be sexy. Buy me, you'll be cool works for a lot of advertising, or they wouldn't use it. So, you know, or efficacy, Tide cleans better, Duracell lasts longer. I mean, but if you're non-branded, it's hard to say that. So, because the brand is the way that you differentiate. All you can say is I'm eco. So what I'm saying to you is we are the ones who are the first to crack it, getting the world's major brands and the world's major retailers, because most sales are not e-commerce. Most sales continue to be through retailers. So I think the point is, in that way, at this moment, there is no competition. Will there be? It's a big world. I mean, yeah. And think of this. It took 30 years for the milkman model to fade globally and for single use to come in to be prevalent. It's still rolling out. It's not going to happen overnight. Goal in my lifetime is to see durable, reusable become the norm, and disposable single use to be the exception. And when people have a choice, I believe they'll feel a pang. And if they go for the convenience for some reason of an exception, there could be lots of reasons why it would be more convenient, they're probably going to demand a recycling solution, and we're there to provide both. Will there be competition? In all cases, particularly as this area grows, and it needs to. You know, there's competition in the car business, there's competition in the shampoo business. I mean, there's competition in the food business. May there be competition. We are kind of a pioneer, but I'd say it's more of a harbinger.
We had another episode kind of similar by a woman who we call Queen of Raw. Have you heard of her?
Stephanie Benedetto.
She's actually doing a different model, which is taking unused fabrics and not necessarily recycling them, but reselling them to the original manufacturer, like the brand manufacturers of the clothing. So it's basically she's an aggregator of wasted fabric and bringing it back.
From the industrial process.
Yes.
It's post-industrial. That's a great idea. I mean, we're seeing it happening. We're moving loop, just so you know, into clothing. Think of, there's lots of sports, but think of hockey, because there's so much things that the kids need to wear. And every year, if they grow an inch, they need a new uniform. I mean, we operate in Canada where it's every kid, most kids want to play hockey. And I will tell you, so how about you pay for it, you know, the first time, and then if you keep it, in, it's made to last. So if you keep it in normal wear and tear, you return it and you get 80% credit on next year's. I mean, and the retailer still makes something. The manufacturer makes something each time around, so that you basically are able to keep things going. We're looking to do this with other types of things. Obviously, we're moving into Burger King, McDonald's, and others. So quick service food, you know, is another area. We're in Ulta Beauty, which means that the all the different cosmetics will be moving into there. I mean, Chanel's getting involved, luxury, Shiseido in Japan. So I think it's not a one area, one category thing. And I love what you were saying is happening with post-industrial fiber and materials, because there's value there. And we just need to get smart about it.
Something, Richard, which I guess it will. This is another whole new topic, I guess. I was just wondering if we could like add a little bit of that, because all we've been covering, especially with TerraCycle, and then Loop comes in, and when you go through these examples, there is a certain mindset. Like when you talk about the Canada, hockey. Hockey shirt. It's a certain mindset also, which accepts that kind of, yeah, we were told to throw away. Yeah, that was easy, because as we kind of turn away from, you know, waste, that's kind of easy. But how to come back to reusing or rethinking?
You get a better uniform each time.
Yeah.
And the other piece is that thoughts are changing. How many people ate kale 5 years ago? How many people eat it now? I just mean, tastes are changing. Various things are changing. And you know, when somebody's going to get themselves a Loop package and they're able to look at their app and go, this package is 78 times old used. it's valued more than something that's new. That will shift just as we evolve as beings and as consciousness. When the writers come, when people have it, when it's in the movies and somebody said, you know, I wanted to keep that package, but, you know, like I felt like I was standing in the way of its life. Like, you know, I put it back, but I would have loved to have that. Like the new, you know, values change as we change, as the world changes. And not all the shifts are what I would be say going on now are in the right direction in our world or in our country. What I can say is there's a lot of also shifts in the right direction, and it's kind of the pendulum swings. So I think this is something that will shift. I think you're speaking about what we evolved into, and I think there's a way out of this one. And we are a reflection of those changes. We're not making those changes and bringing the people. I think people are demanding this. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the world's largest brands and the world's largest retailers behind us. We just had to find a way to make the numbers work for everybody. And that's kind of where I say our CEO's genius is. He outsmarted waste by thinking through the economics and getting the various players to see new synergies by treating it differently.
Yeah. Good.
It's great to be with both of you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. You know, I think a lot of times people think this triple bottom line or this impact investing means somehow sacrificing profit. And I think one of the things that he's pointing out, and sometimes maybe it does, frankly, cut into profits a little bit, because you do have to invest over time. You do have to upfront put in some money to make some of these things work. But I think what he's shown is not that it's cutting into profits so much, but that you can recast economic models such that impactful or socially responsible or ecologically responsible product development and distribution and wastes are profitable, can be profitable. So it's still really a single bottom line. It's just more aligned with the planet.
I wonder, I think it's called the Gaussian curve.
Gaussian curve?
Gaussian curve. Do you know what that is? A mathematical term.
Yes, I studied mathematics. But I'm not sure about what you're talking.
How do you call it, Gaussian?
It's the bell curve. We call it the bell curve.
Oh, the bell curve.
It's basically, you have the long tail going into it, and then it, you know, the majority of the action happens in the middle. That's called the bell, and then the tail that goes.
Yeah. So where we make everything possible for, like, we kind of reduce, yeah, we reduce variety, reduce diversity into basically making the average, like the average body size becomes the norm. If you're not that body size, you have a problem. Like me, for example, I have two long arms. And so to find a shirt, like a proper shirt which fits me, mm-hmm. it's pretty difficult, right?
I have the exact opposite problem.
I think, what's you?
2 centimeters, too short.
Okay. My point was that we reduced diversity. We reduced it to sort of this average norm. So we've kind of figured out how to make more of one, and that is kind of the bell curve. When you see, so it's kind of the one almost more, well, MLXL basically comes from this, SMXL. No, SMLXL.
I think you're right? Saying one size fits all. In other words, the manufacturing became more uniform in order to mass produce. So you just pick the most average person and produce for that.
Right. And all I want to point out is that we actually had an economic system which was very much supporting that kind of thought process. Yeah, it supports competition in a beautiful way. Yeah, you're making money, you need to make more profit, so here we go, how can we make more profit, and how can we become more efficient in manufacturing one? And then, of course, it comes now that we, like, look back, it's like, we know now that, you know, things move out to China, yeah, in order to make it even more profitable, and we are using clothes, you know, which, you know, may not be the best for us nor the environment, and et cetera, et cetera. So,
but I have a point in that, okay? And that is, I'm not sure it's only profit profit is the motive for the individual manufacturer to maximize their output, right?
It's growth.
However, it's growth. I think growth is the real basic motivation. And it's not been all bad. It's been our way of giving all of humanity access to clothing, to water, to food, to like all of that technology, all of that mass production actually did develop society, okay? And it has this whole collateral damage, which is called screwing up the planet Earth, right? And now we have to redesign this economic system, not with respect to growth, but with respect to sustainability and prosperity for all. And that's where these questions come in. You know, you can know, and whether or not you're designing for the masses or the average size, one size fits all kind of manufacturing, or with technology, we can now begin to customize without losing too much profitability and not without losing too much growth. So you can do both. And that's the question I have. I understand that growth is no longer the goal, right? But perhaps sustainability, quality of life, things like that are the goal. And how do we create an economic system that maximizes those goals in addition to profitability?
I think we're making a little bit like, yeah, it's all good what you said, but it's always like jumping into the future where we are at currently, just where we right now are, is an era of digitalization, okay, where we are trying to, and we do see a shift in values. And that's what you just pointed to, is, yeah, we do actually see that our planet cannot take it anymore. That constant taking, that constant extraction and not giving back is just not sustainable at all, right? And I think we by now not only can talk about the limits of growth, we actually see our limits of growth. So when it then comes to companies like TerraCycle and Loop, who kind of take in that shift in value of how their customers or how their brand customers behave? And obviously they actually say it, or he said it, they've worked out the economics in order to make that company, whether it's TerraCycle and Loop, be successful. So for me, a question is, with the digitalization now and more digital stuff coming in, how are we using these for the basics of a new economy, on a regenerative economy, to create a basis and foundation for other inventive, innovative people? With, because we do need more of TerraCycles and Loops, you know. Right. Maybe you could also say it like this: we are like playing with like new balls, right? And these balls are faster, these balls reach, you know, longer, but we're still playing in the old ballpark. And so we now have the possibility to redesign a new ballpark. I think this is what you say.
Yes.
But is it like just to make the ballpark bigger, or is it to maybe just invent an entire new game?
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast.
For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.